It's really nice to see such interest in all the wildlife in Washington. So tonight I'll be talking about wolves and I'll talk about their return to Washington State, talk a little bit about the history of wolves as far as, you know, the federal government listing them as endangered. Of course, I'll talk about the controversy with wolves. They're a very, very hot topic in Washington State. In Idaho, in Montana, Wyoming, if you read the newspapers or you watch TV, you know that wolves are controversial. On Friday, I'm actually showing a documentary that was filmed about the first wolf pack that came and established in Washington State, and they were established just north of Holden, like in the Methow Valley. And I'll be showing a film on Friday. It's a documentary, and it's really good. If you have any questions, just fire away. So I'll talk a little bit about the biology, status of the wolves in Washington. Talk about the conservation plan. So a little bit of a history. Prior to the expansion of humans out west, there was plenty of wolves in Washington. They were hunted and trapped extensively. So you see here, about 15,000 wolf pelts were caught in this 30-year period. In the 1880s and early 1900s, there was a bounty on the wolves, meaning that you just go out and shoot them, and then if you brought in a dead wolf, you get paid for it. By the 1930s, the wolves were completely eliminated from Washington State. And actually, they were completely eliminated from Washington, Idaho, Wyoming, and Montana. There were some wolves that were coming down from Canada into Montana, Idaho, Wyoming, but essentially they were gone. We wiped them out. In our great wisdom, we decided the wolf was not worthy of living among us. So everything was stacked against the wolf. There was no way the wolves were going to recover with those old attitudes and without some kind of management. So in 1973, the federal government decided that the gray wolf should be listed as an endangered, threatened and endangered species. In 1980, the state of Washington listed them as an endangered species. But it's so controversial that we went back and forth. So in 2008, they were delisted. And then later in the year, they were restored to endangered status. So it was a back and forth because there were a lot of lawsuits. The hunters and ranchers would say, there's plenty of wolves. So then the federal government would delist them. And then the conservation community and the environmentalists would say, well, wait a minute, there aren't enough wolves. So then they would go back on. It was basically flip-flopping for quite a few years. Currently, it's really weird. So this line, imaginary line in Washington State, everything east of this line, including Idaho and Montana, Wyoming, the wolf is no longer considered as endangered. In Washington State, currently, if you're a wolf and you live over here, you're not endangered, but if you live on this side of the line, you are endangered. What I'm trying to get at is we can't make up our minds, and it's a back and forth. So right now, if you're a wolf over here in Washington, you're likely, you can be shot and hunted, and over here, you're safe. I think it's all really, really weird. All right, so let's talk about wolves, and there will be a quiz. So you will be quizzed on this. So what's the difference between a wolf and a coyote? The wolf has a stouter nose, more rounded and a little bit shorter ears. The coyote, really long snout and pointed ears. And of course, it's smaller. Coyotes are smaller than wolves. In this photo, the animals on the right are coyotes, and the animals on the left are wolves. So, again, you can't use color to identify and tell a difference between a wolf and a coyote, so forget color. It's going to be the face and the size. So the pointy ears and the long nose. You can see this is much more stout and a little shorter and rounded ears. Although this guy could be confused for a coyote. I think this is in the spring. All right, so here's your test. And these are actual wolves and coyotes from Washington State. So I'm trying to remember. I got to remember. What is that?
Coyote.
I better check. I don't want to totally misconfuse you guys, but I think that's a wolf.
That's right.
Oh, no. Coyote. Good one. Okay, number two.
Wolf.
Yeah, that's a young wolf. Number three.
Coyote.
Correct. Very pointy ears. And coyotes do have, can have some reddish tinge in the fur. Number four.
Wolf.
That's exactly, that's a 13-month-old wolf. How about number five?
Wolf.
Yes, an adult wolf in the spring. Number six?
German Shepherd.
What?
German Shepherd.
Number six is a 4-month-old wolf pup. Number seven? Great. Good one. Eight?
Coyote.
And nine?
Wolf.
Perfect. You guys passed. These are actual coyote tracks on the left, wolf tracks on the right. And remember, the wolf track now, you are going to see claws because the wolves are dogs and they can't retract their claws like a cat. So if you're out and you see claws, these are the claw marks. You almost certainly can throw out the cougar. And now it's going to be either a coyote or a wolf. And, of course, the coyote tracks are much smaller than a wolf. There are wolf-dog hybrids, and these are all wolf-dog hybrids. They're actually illegal to have a wolf-dog hybrid in many parts of Washington and possibly the entire state, but there's quite a, I mean, this looks just like a wolf to me. You would have no way of knowing, really. So, as far as the wolf, they're highly adaptable. They're very social. So this is, again, very different than the cougars, which are cats. The wolves are social. There's a breeding pair, so there's a mom and dad. They mate for life. They're monogamous. Then in the breeding pair, then there's the young, and there's even young yearlings from the years past. The whole wolf pack, so in a wolf pack of 5 to 10, the entire wolf pack helps breed the animal. So when the breeding male and female, the alpha male and the alpha female, breed and they raise cubs, the entire pack helps raise them, including the dad. And I'll talk a little bit more about that. They breed at about 2 or 3 years. They mate in February, go into the breeding dens, and then they average about 4 to 6 pups.
What does that mean, den site versus farm?
I'll tell you in a minute.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'll tell you now. So actually, let me see. The pups are born in a breeding den, and then at about 8 weeks old, right about here, when they're 8 weeks, the entire pack picks up the young, and they move to what's called a rendezvous site. And they'll move to several rendezvous sites in the first year of those pups. And the rendezvous sites are just temporary dens. They move there, one, because I think for safety, if they stay too long in the den site, then eventually the pups could be at risk from other predators. So they move them, I think, for safety. And also they'll move to a rendezvous site that's closer to prey, like closer to an elk or deer or bird. And it's usually near water. What's interesting is when they move to a rendezvous site and the pups don't actually travel when the pack goes out to hunt, those pups will stay at the rendezvous site and they'll leave one adult wolf to guard the pups. And it may not be the alpha male or the alpha female. It'll just be one of the packs will stay behind to care for the wolves and protect them. So just like the bears and the cougars, at 2 to 3 years old, both the female wolf and the male wolf have to disperse, or they have to leave their pack to go find their own pack. They have to go find their own mate for life. So primary prey of wolves are elk, deer, and moose. And they prey on the weak. They prey on the old. Remember I told you how the cougar lies in wait, and whatever comes by, the cougar jumps on and eats. Well, the wolves, they're running predator. They'll chase their prey down. So the wolves will generally get the old, the young, the injured, the sick. Or in this case, the nerdy herd guy. So they do have, of course, they do have other things they eat: fish, marmot, grouse, beaver, rabbits. Essentially, the larger the prey, the larger the pack. So in Yellowstone, There are wolf packs that live close to the bison. And over the years, those wolf packs that are next to the bison, they're generally larger, physically larger. It makes sense. If you're going to try to take down a bison, which are, this tall and this big, you need to be a little bit larger and better, a little more aggressive. So the larger the prey, the larger the wolves. Because the wolves in Washington are just arriving, we don't really know what kind of size they're going to end up. So the wolves follow the ungulates, or they follow the deer, they follow the moose, they follow the caribou up in the Arctic. So I haven't shared with you personal story about interactions that I've had with some of the wildlife. So I've actually got two stories to talk about. The raven is in a bird family called the Corvidae, and it's blue jays, stellar jays, gray jays, or camp robbers. Some people call them camp. Mockingbirds are in the Corvid family. And it's probably
crows.
What?
Crows.
Crows, yep. And they're the smartest bird species that we have in the United States. So they are so smart. So I'm trying to see. So let me tell you a story about the raven. I went skiing, cross-country skiing, down by White's Pass one winter, and I was by myself, and I came to a lake, and next to the lake was an opening, and there was a slope about as high as this building, like up to the roof, that had no trees on it. And I stopped to take, you know, catch my breath, and there were four ravens at the bottom of this snowy slope. And I stopped, and I was, you know, they couldn't see me. I stopped to catch my breath, and I watched them. And I didn't really think anything of it until they, I heard one of them go, ca-caw! And then the other one went, ca-caw! And they kind of hopped around, ca-caw, ca-caw! And then one of the ravens flew to the top of this slope and got to the very top, and he got up there, and he goes, ca-caw, ca-caw! And the other guys down at the bottom were like, ca-caw, ca-caw! And this raven got to the top of the slope, stood there, and then he went head over heels, rolling down the slope. And he got to the bottom, and all the crows were like, ca-caw, ca-caw! And then the next one flew to the top of this hill. He got to the top, and he was like, ca-caw, ca-caw! And the other guys at the bottom were like, ca-caw, ca-caw! And then he rolled over and somersaulted down the hill. I stood there and watched them playing for like 10 minutes. They all took turns flying up and down, and every time someone went down, they'd all like, you know, yell at each other and congratulate each other. So that's my personal story. Another story I read about is the raven talking to the wolf. I read about this in a book. There was a couple, a man and a woman, and their dog went to live with the wolves up in the Yukon somewhere. They wanted to learn about wolves. And they established a camp near some wolves, and they lived near this den for about a year. And one day, they noticed, so the wolves during the day would go and lay down and lounge around and take a nap, and they'd be around their den. Well, one day, while they were observing the wolves, and this is up in the Arctic, so these wolves hunted caribou. And up in the Arctic, you know, it's kind of flat, and there's not a lot of relief, a lot of trees. So one day they're watching the wolves, and the wolves are all taking a nap. And they're watching the wolves, and shortly, two or three ravens come and land on the trees next to the wolves. And they go, ca-caw, ca-caw! And they do that a couple of times, and then the wolves kind of wake up. They look up at the raven, and the raven's like, ca-caw, ca-caw! And the raven flies off. The whole pack gets up and follows the raven because the raven had seen some caribou. And they were they came back, they knew where the wolves were. And they were telling them, get up, wake up, there's caribou to be hunted. And so the wolves went and hunted the caribou. Of course, the ravens are omnivores. They eat caribou meat. And once the wolves are done with the caribou and had their fill, they leave, and the ravens come in to eat. So that's my story of the raven and the wolf. All right. Just like the bears and the cougars, wolves are keystone species. If you remove the wolves from the ecosystem, you cause all kinds of imbalances. In this case, they've actually documented this in Yellowstone. Before the wolves were there, the elk would breed or would browse on the aspen trees, so the aspens would only get so tall. Well, when the wolves came back, the wolves would cause the elk and the deer not to graze on the trees, so the aspen trees would grow larger, which meant there were more trees for the beavers to build dams, which meant that the more dams that the beavers could build, there'd be more ponds, And because there were more ponds, there were more fish, and there were also more habitat for smaller birds. So you see how everything is connected. It's same with the cougars and it's same with the bears. In 1996, wolves were reintroduced into Idaho. As far as Washington, there were occasional wolves sighted way up north near Canada because they were coming in from Canada. And then in 2008, Washington State got its first wolf pack. And this is called the Lookout Pack. For scientists to actually confirm the requirement for a wolf pack is that there be a breeding male and female, and that they breed young successfully for at least 2 years. That's the language they use to say that we actually have a wolf pack, because there's always wolves that disperse and maybe cut through or move around. So in 2008, we got the very first wolf pack in Washington. These are actual pictures of the very first wolf pack in Washington, the pups. Unfortunately, in 2008, the wolf pack was actually poached. Someone went in and shot, I think, the breeding female. And it's kind of a tragic story because the way I don't know if you've heard this, but the way they found out that the pack had been poached, someone had illegally gone in and shot him, was somebody went to the post office up in Okanagan or Tenasket and was mailing a box to Canada. And they dropped off this box at the post office or UPS, and one of the handlers of the box noticed that there was blood coming out of the box. And he called somebody, I don't know if he called the sheriff or somebody, they opened up the box, and it was a wolf pelt from the Lookout Pack. It was the wolf that had been illegally shot. The person was trying to mail it to Canada, I think, to have the hide tanned or something. And it was all over in the papers. They got fined, and I think they took their guns away. So then we got a second pack up in the Diamond Pack up in the northeast corner of Washington. This is the Diamond Pack, actual photos of the Diamond Pack. Then there was a third pack, the Salmo Pack. Then there was a pack way down here near Oregon. In 2012, now we had, six packs, seven packs, eight? Okay. So currently, as of August 2019, there are 27 packs now in Washington. And I took this out of the paper. I just got this out of the newspaper like a week ago. And what's significant about this article is that this number one, it's the first wolf pack to be on the west side of the Cascades to actually get established. Just as an aside, you might have heard about the wolf, the lone wolf in Oregon that dispersed from its wolf pack. It traveled, it was famous because it went from this corner of Oregon all the way down to like the Klamath Falls area of California looking for a mate. So it became this wolf that left Oregon and went all the way down to Klamath Falls, the Trinity area of California. It had a radio collar, so that's how we know the wolf that you can follow. It became the first wolf in California in like 60 years. And as it turned out, it found a mate on the Oregon. It found a mate on the Oregon-California border, and there's now a wolf pack. Officially it's in Oregon, but there's now a wolf pack on the border of Oregon-California. And how in the world you can go from like the very corner of Oregon to California and find a mate, I don't know. I think it's an incredible story. And as far as other states, in 2009, Idaho had 843 wolves, successful breeding pairs. In general, people do support wolf recovery in Washington. These are just surveys that have been done. So Washington had to develop a wolf recovery plan because the wolves in Washington are coming back naturally, by the way. So there have been no wolves introduced into Washington. They're coming from Idaho and Canada, and maybe Montana. But the management plan does not call for any wolves to be reintroduced into Washington. They will gradually establish themselves in Washington if we let them. So the Washington State, the Wildlife Department had to come up with a management plan. And in the management plan, they came up with two key points. So no wolves is not an option, so they're not going to stop the natural entry of wolves into Washington. They're not going to try to stop it. And as I said, they're not going to augment the population. They're not going to bring wolves in and let them go in Washington. And as I mentioned with the grizzly bears, there are people, and there's a website, and there are people that actually believe that the government, federal government or state government, is dropping wolves into the Cascade Mountains. There's a website where a person claims that wolves are being parachuted out of airplanes in cages, and when they land, the cage opens and the wolves go. That's not happening. And then one other myth is that the wolves that are coming into Washington are a different species that was here historically. So there are claims that the wolves in Washington State are a bigger, fiercer wolf that actually lives in the Yukon. And again, that's not true. These are the same wolf species that was historically here for years and years. So Washington State established a citizens committee, so people just like you and me can get on this committee to help guide the Washington State on what we should do with wolves. This citizens committee consists of ranchers, hunters, environmentalists. It's a broad spectrum of groups. And what's interesting is, just to tell you how controversial the wolf is in Washington, what's interesting is this committee was supposed to meet 14 times this year. Well, I just saw this article in the paper just a week ago, and it says, statewide wolf meetings canceled after threats of violence. So they've canceled all of these citizens meetings, all of them. They canceled all of them for the year because they couldn't guarantee the safety of the people attending the meeting. I'm trying to give you an idea of just how the conflicts are. And if you come to the film on Friday that I'm going to show about the wolves, they actually interview a broad spectrum of people, and you'll get a better understanding of why there's such antagonism about the wolf coming into Washington. it's really eye-opening. So in Washington State, the Fish and Game Department declared that there would be three areas where they're going to try to recover the wolf. So obviously right now in eastern Washington, we have a good number of wolves, but we currently don't have any down here. Or, well, actually, depending on where this line is drawn, there are some wolves here. But in order for the wolf to be delisted from threatened and endangered in Washington State, we need to have, by the management plan, we need to have wolves in all three of these management areas. So even in Washington State, we may have tons of wolves here and here, but they're still going to stay on the threatened and endangered list in Washington. I'm not talking about federal listing, but in Washington, they'll still stay there until we can establish wolves like, say, down here. As far as management tools and livestock conflicts with livestock ranchers and sheep grazers, they do allow, and you currently, there is lethal control of wolves. If a wolf pack just gets too enamored with taking a rancher's cattle, they will go. Well, they have actually. Again, just this month, they went in and by helicopter, essentially took out a whole pack in northeastern Washington. And those ranchers are compensated. So if you lose a sheep or a cow, you do get compensation for it. Of course, if you're there are things that, you know, if you're a rancher, there are things you can do to help minimize wolf conflicts. But you know, in fairness to the ranchers and the farmers, it's a lot of work. You know, you have to do extra work to protect your cattle and your sheep. So I can understand some of the issues that they have. We do have a plan to monitor big game conflicts. So another issue when you have wolves coming in is with the hunters. So if you're a hunter, now you have to compete with the wolf for the same elk and deer. And so, again, there are a lot of there are misconceptions that the wolf are going to eat all the deer or the wolf are going to eat all the elk. The reality is, you know, for thousands of years before we arrived, the wolf and the elk and the deer, they all lived together, and, you know, the wolf never, it doesn't make sense for a wolf population to kill all the deer. That's what they eat, and there is a balance. What does happen if you're a hunter, what does happen is if you're a hunter, the wolves do make the deer and elk much more wary of noises and sounds. So it's harder to hunt now if you've got wolves in the area. But I threw this in here because if, you know, the wolves get blamed for everything. If the deer go down, if you're a hunter and you go out and you don't get your deer, well, it's easy to blame the wolf. Well, there's too many wolves. That's why I didn't shoot my deer this year. I just put this in here. This is obviously a map of Idaho, and these are all wolf packs in Idaho, and they basically established themselves in Idaho now. And I put this in here because Idaho has 23 big game hunting units, and of those 23 big game hunting units, last year, 20 of them, the elk and deer population was at their target or above their target level. So it, it statistically and scientifically, there is no evidence that the wolf is decimating elk populations or decimating deer populations. They've gone out and counted and done their estimates, and there are some game units that are affected by wolves, and my guess is that they're going to be in these periphery areas where there's not that great of elk or deer habitat. This is just this is Washington State's plan. So in those three areas that I told you about, when in each one of these areas, when we reach six breeding pairs, when we get to a total of 15 breeding pairs, that's when Washington State is going to delist the wolf and you'll be able to hunt them. And I think it's a pretty small number. I mean, in eastern, two breeding pairs, two in the North Cascades and five in the South. When we get to that number, according to the management plan in Washington State, they will delist them and then they'll no longer be endangered, threatened, or sensitive. They'll become a game species. Personally, I think it's a little low of those numbers. And again, these are the areas where the numbers, they have to have, two to three breeding pair here, two to three here, four to five here, and then they'll delist them in the entire state. If you want any more information, you can get this from the Department of Wildlife. That is the end of the wolf talk, and I have something to read. So I'm gonna finish up with this what I read about in this book. So in southern Canada, I think it's over there north of the Great Lakes, there's a national park called hold on, somebody from back over
there.
Algonquin National Park in Canada. So let me just read you what happened there when the wolves started to come back. So a strange phenomena was evolving in Algonquin Park in the summer of 1963. University of Toronto biologists and his graduate students were conducting unique wolf research. They would go out and communicate with the wolves at night by howling from darkened dirt roads and listening for eerie replies that drifted like smoke through the night air. So you can go out, anybody can go out and howl, and if you do it right, a wolf will answer. So they were doing some research. So families that were camping on a lake in a campground got wind of what was going on, and they questioned the park naturalists incessantly. Visitors were so interested in this phenomena of going out and howling at wolves, and the park rangers got so tired of explaining the wolf research program to everybody that was at the campground that they decided it was time to take a new step and take a few of them out to a guaranteed place where they could hear the wolves themselves. So an announcement about the event was slipped into the back pages of the park newsletter on August 7th, 1963. So they put an announcement that, if you want to come here, we're going out on this date, you can come along. So on the appointed night, the two park rangers drove off of Highway 60 to see if anyone was willing to take them up on their offer. To their astonishment, 600 people, 600 people in 180 vehicles jammed the roads of the campground, ready to go wolf howling. And so began the park tradition of a green park vehicle leading several miles long snake of red taillights through the darkened recesses of the park. First public wolf howl got only a faint reply from one lonely wolf. But as the park staff got more organized, the results improved dramatically. On a good night, 1,000 people in 250 cars would park along a dirt road, forest access road, with impossible quiet. A naturalist would begin to howl, and another would join in. And as the wolves yipped and hooted in reply, the hair on the backs of 1,000 necks would rise. Wow. So, anyways, that's the end of my talk. Thank you. Any wolf questions? Yes.
A few years ago, I saw a piece on the Mexican.
You can turn the light on. Lights on.
What? I saw a piece on the Mexican wolf.
Uh-huh.
How is that doing, and how might that be related, if at all?
So the Mexican wolf's a different species, smaller, okay, of course, and it's also been listed as threatened and endangered, and then delisted. I think the status right now is it's teetering. I don't know exactly where it's at.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. They're trying to deport them.
They're trying to deport
to Mexico. Yes. Are there any in the Olympic?
No. Not yet.
Well, how would they do in the Olympic Peninsula?
How would they do?
Yeah, because they have a lot of elk over there, and they...
I think they would do fine, but there's... It's going to be a long time before they naturally get there, if they do at all.
Because they have to go around the...
Well, they're not going to swim Puget Sound, yeah. So they're going to have to go down around Olympia and go up. And correct me if I'm wrong, I could be wrong, but I think the Roosevelt elk that are in the park are not native. Does anybody know?
Well, the goats were.
I'm not sure if they're native.
They're hollow.
Yeah.
Would they eat the elk Roosevelt? Doesn't matter if they...
Oh, no, they would eat the elk.
Okay.
Yeah.
How are the packs named? How are the packs named?
Oh, that's
There's
a good question.
There's some weird names in there.
That's a good question. So generally, as a scientist, when you're studying wildlife, and I did this too when I had my fine mark research, you know, scientists are very by the book. Everything's got to be recorded. And in general, we're discouraged from associating any human names or even giving human traits to wildlife. It's just not done as a biologist or a scientist, you know.
Mm-hmm.
When I started researching pine martens, I just named them myself. And so they're named by the first biologist to discover them or find them. He'll give them a name.
Uh-huh.
And it's just recently that the stoic academic biologists have let names come into, but yeah.
How do they land on dirty shirt? Because that was one of the wolf packs.
I don't know. So generally, the name is going to be like by a geographic feature. So Lookout Pat was named because they're next to Lookout Mountain.
Mm-hmm.
But I have no idea how they came up with that. I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah.
Following the discussion the last couple nights of the hiker, are there any challenges with hiking? Like you were talking about the cougars were, you know,
going to... No. So what's interesting is a friend of mine was hiking here in the North Cascades, and he was coming out of the forest or wherever he was hiking, somewhere up here, him and his friend. And on their way out, they came up to a Boy Scout troop that was going in. And, you know, the Boy Scout troop's going in, and one of the leaders was carrying a rifle. And my friend stopped, and he, you know, they chit-chat, because, you know, you meet someone on the trail, you know, you stop, you say hello, you got a move. Anyways, they chit-chatted, and my friend was curious about it. He goes, well, you know, why are you, you know, it's not hunting season, but were you bringing a rifle into the wilderness? And the scoutmaster's response was, well, haven't you heard there's wolves here? He completely thought that he needed a rifle, that the wolves were going to attack his kids.
They wouldn't be interested in interacting with them, and they want to be...
No, there's no... I mean, now, has there maybe been a wolf attacking a human? Probably somewhere. I don't know of any. But, I mean, but there's no... It's not like a cougar or a bear. You're not threatened by wolves.
I'm just going to share. I have... You call them hybrids. They're 90% two. I have two of them.
You have two hybrids?
Oh. Well, yeah, I don't call them hybrids. They're pretty much wolves. They're 90% Arctic gray and then 10% Siberian husky.
Nice.
The most incredible creatures.
Where do you live?
Astoria, Oregon.
How did you get them?
I got them from a breeder, which I don't encourage at all. That's how most people, or how wolves end up in sanctuaries. Mm-hmm. I had done a lot of research, my daughter also, and so we knew what we were getting, but you still don't.
Yeah.
You know, they're a lot of work, but they're amazing, and...
Oh, I'm glad to, I'd love to talk to you some more.
Yeah.
I've never met anyone that's has hybrids.
Yeah. So I have two.
Be nice. I'd love to know more about them.
All right.
You got some questions up top.
Yeah. Go ahead.
What is the biggest wolf pack that lives in
Boulder,
like here?
Yeah, so I think some of the biggest wolves are in Yellowstone National Park, the ones that hunt the bison, and I think the males can get up to 130 pounds. That's pretty big. Yeah, what's your question?
Are there any wolves, like, around Holden?
That's a good question. The question was, are there any wolves around Holden? There are some just... in the Methow, there are wolves. I don't know. No, I don't think there's any. Not yet. But I bet you very soon you will have... I bet you in the next year or two that you will get a wolf pack on... The north side of Lake Chelan. I bet you there will be wolves there because there's mountain goats there and not mountain goats, bighorn sheep on the north side of Lake Chelan, and that's I think some wolves would move in there. That's a really good question, and you should come to the Wolverine talk because there is a Wolverine in Holt. There, Holton does have a Wolverine.
Wow.
That's a really good question. All right, well, thank you very much. I'll see you.